Welcome to Alternative Dog Moms Podcast. I'm Kimberly Gauthier, the creator of Keep the Tail Wagging. For the past 9 years, I've been blogging about raw feeding, pet wellness, and life as a crazy dog mom. I've seen massive improvements in my dog's health since I started raising my dogs naturally, and I'm passionate about sharing my experience to help other pet parents.
I'm Erin Scott. For the past 9 years, I've been researching and learning everything I can about healing cancer, allergies, autoimmune, and mystery illnesses in both my dogs and myself. And I can't wait to share with you everything I've learned on this journey. As the Alternative Dog Moms, we're bringing you all the latest dog health news that we're following and sharing the tips, tricks, and resources we learn along the way. Now, let's get started. Hello, Kimberly.
Hello, Erin.
So we are joined today, kind of almost in honor of a late St. Patrick's Day, from across the ocean or the pond or whatever as they call it, by Lisa Tully from Ireland. So Lisa, welcome.
Oh, hi. Thanks for having me on again. I'm delighted to be here.
So yes, I had Lisa over on the Believe in Dog podcast last year, and we talked, our topic was called Science versus Woo-Woo, because Lisa has like a very science-oriented background before she got into the work that she does these days. And so if people want to hear her backstory, we'll put a link in the show notes so they can go and listen to the Believe in Dog podcast. But Lisa, do you want to tell us, like, you're somebody, I love the way that you work with clients because you have so many different tools in your toolbox. So can you tell us about like all the different ways that you work with pets and pet parents?
Sure. One thing that I love to start off with is connecting in with the animal and using my animal communication side just to see what they want to share with me, if they're sick or if there's something going on with their person, just to get a bit of a download initially from them. So they'll really set the tone that way if I'm starting to work on them. And then the next step that I would bring in would be if they have a condition that's going on, I will assess it using five elements principles from Chinese medicine. So I look to see what the root cause is that's going on, say, for a particular physical condition. And I'll identify the different patterns, you know, that could potentially be going on with the animal. And then the next step that I would do is if I have blood tests, results from the vets, then I'll use a bit of my science background and I'll look to see what's going on in the bloods. And then I'll kind of apply the Chinese medicine principles. So say a condition could be coming from the liver, it could be coming from the kidney. You know, there's different root causes. So the bloods might help me just narrow that down. And I'll apply that side of it. And then the next step, the next tools I would bring in the toolbox would be something called zoopharmacognosy. And that basically means animals that know how to self-regulate, self-medicate using herbs, botanicals, that kind of thing. So once I've identified within the animal what the pattern of imbalance is, and they help me see how the energy is flowing through each of the organs, through the meridian system, then they'll select whether they want to work with hydrazoles, herbs, diluted down essential oils of really good quality, food therapy. I'll introduce Chinese medicine food therapy as well. So they really run the show. Okay, so often I work with animals where maybe they've come through the veterinary system and there's maybe a little bit of a question mark still there as to what is the cause. So we don't have to worry about that. We just let the animal show me what they need in order to bring themselves back into balance. And then the next stage then working with an animal is looking at the person. Often when animals have an imbalance going on, it can be a mirror of what's going on within their person. So let me give you an example. If you have an animal that has a digestive imbalance going on, they've lost their appetite, they're not really taking in life. So that can be a sign that on some level, their person is not willing to assimilate life. Maybe there's something going on that they can't quite swallow. And so the animal can highlight that by creating imbalances within their own body. And then I'll help the person identify the mirror and make that connection. And the power that that brings in is it frees up the animal then to fully heal or get better or get more in balance, depending on what age they're at, what stage they're at in their condition. And it just means then the person can take responsibility and start to, you know, heal themselves. So what I do is I bring the zoo pharmacognosy in again at that point where the animal will select flower essences for their person. And that's where it gets interesting, you know, because they tell a little bit of a story, that whatever mix they make up for their person tells a story. And when I share that with the person, then it gives them a real context of what the animal can see within them that they would love for them to heal. And then it just becomes a real synergistic effect, you know. So that's a long answer, but I work with animals for a long time.
Yeah. So I'm really interested in this. I've been practicing how to say this, zoo pharmacognosy, because I look at it in like a simple form. Like, we've all seen our dogs like go outside and eat grass if they had an upset stomach or something. And so I'm just so curious, like, how do animals know these things? Like, how, you know, do you have any insight into this? Because I'm just fascinated by this concept.
Yeah, well, you know, there's different ways you can explain this, but I suppose for me, I see it as almost like a vibration. Okay. Cause I'm really into vibrational medicine. I'm really into flower essences. I work with a lot of homeopathic vets, share cases. Then I'll go on to the herbs and all that kind of stuff. And when I originally started working with zoo pharmacognosy, it was really taught to me that it's about how the animal can smell. You know, to the aromatherapy, they can smell what's in the herb, they can smell what's in the oil, and they instinctively know through the smell that the chemical components that are within that herb is what's going to heal them. And therefore, they'll select that on food as well. They'll do the exact same thing. But then what I did was I took it to the next level. Once I had my qualifications, my cat Georgie was quite sick. So what I did was I was working with my friend who's a homeopathic vet, and she's prescribing different remedies for him as well as everything we were doing for him. And what I started to do was I started to put homeopathy in little saucers of water, okay, different remedies, okay, that because his condition was hypothyroidism, which is really, really tricky to manage. Like, they'll just change. Their symptoms can go up and down in a moment. And I just thought, well, let me just put you in charge. And so we had all the remedies out, and he would just take a sip of one and then go off, come back later, have another sip of one, and then come to the next saucer, have another little sip, and then go off. And then we started to realize that it was the vibration. Well, I realized it was the vibration he could sense and pick up, that there was no smell to the homeopathy. All right. So then I went deeper into it, and I started doing it with flower essences as well. And literally how flower essences are made is you put a flower in a bowl of water and put it in the sun. And then the sun's energy helps the vibration of the flower go out into the water. You take the flower out, and then you have your mother tincture. That's how you work. That's how they're made. So again, and they're diluted down. So there's no real strong plant physical component in it. And the animals will self-select it. So now I work with essences with animals, and they'll just go straight for the one that they need.
Nice. That's so amazing, because I've seen people, and I forgot about this until you were talking about it, but years ago, someone on social media shared a picture. What they do is they will take dandelions, and they will put the flowers in a pitcher with water and just let it sit out in the sun, and they make dandelion tea for their dog. And I remember doing this once a long time ago, and I completely forgot about it. But as you know, as a natural detox and all the other benefits that dandelions have.
Yeah. And it's so prevalent this time of year, because this is springtime when the dandelions come up, and the organs that kick in for all of us, but our fluffs as well in this time of year, is the liver and the gallbladder. So the body starts to detox. So dandelion is perfect. You know, make more of it.
I guess it makes me think like of all the different things that we do for our dogs to keep them healthy, right? Like we do, you know, CBD and mushrooms and, you know, different like things that we might mix in with their food. And part of me is like, should we be letting them self-select these things more?
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we are the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
Yeah, I absolutely. So what I would say to people is usually we'll get a supplement and just naturally mix it all into their food. But I would say just put the supplement in just a separate part of their food and allow the rest of their food to be pure. Okay, so then you're giving the animal an opportunity to whether they want to eat the supplement or they want to have their dinner. Like just during the week there, I was talking to one of my clients and she was putting a seaweed product into her dog's food to try and clear the tear stains of the eyes. The liver's getting a little bit antsy. And the dog stopped eating his breakfast. So I joined the dots. I said, has the dog stopped eating the breakfast since you started putting it in? She goes, yeah. I said, he doesn't want it. So also what it does is it can be a nice way to check. So if you initially give them a supplement, put it in a part of their food, they eat it, and then you can give it into their food for a while. And then if you take it out again and separate it out just to check a week, 2 weeks later, do you still want it? So you can play around with it that way as well. And then you're allowing them to gauge what they need and when they need it.
I love that. Yeah, I started years ago in 2020, one of my dogs developed cancer and she stopped eating her food. And a friend of mine told me to start feeding her from a plate instead of a bowl, because that way I could spread the food out so she can select what she wanted to eat and she wasn't overwhelmed by the smells. And it worked perfectly. And after that, I went out and bought bowls or pasta bowls. So basically human pasta plates, bowls, things for my dogs. And that's what I feed them from so that I can spread the food out a little bit. And it would be easy. I mean, like with a powder supplement, just add a little bit of water to turn it into a paste and put it into an area and see what they'll do with it. It'll be really interesting. I'm going to try that today.
Yeah, yeah. And then also what you can do as well, like usually with the zoo pharmacognosy, you're using usually one product, one type of herb, etc. Mm-hmm. But I don't, you know, if I've like recommended, say, Four Leaf Rover or some of those great products for my clients, I'll still use the same principles, just put it in, you know, put it in a little part of the food. But what I would say, Kimberly, is if you have like a pure product, say you've got a bit of spirulina, okay, mm-hmm. which is so good for everything. you put a little bit of spirulina on the plate and put a little bit of water in it. So part of the spirulina is kind of wet mm-hmm. and then part of spirulina is dry. And you put that plate down. And if the animal really wants that spirulina, they might just lick it up pure. So that could be another way you can test a product.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm really just fascinated by it. And then sometimes I wonder, like, are we like, am I just doing everything wrong? Should I just be letting them, you know, pick?
Yeah, that's how I feel sometimes. In fact, I think we talked about this, Aaron and I, within the past couple of weeks, is the grass, when it comes up in the spring, there's something about the grass that my dogs are like, yeah, this is the grass, because I'll take them outside and it's not like I don't know, but I'm pretty confident that they don't have an upset stomach. They're not vomiting up the grass, but they're sniffing around and looking for some type of grass that they weren't looking for a month ago, but they're just very interested in it now. And so they'll take about 5 or 10 minutes where they're sniffing around eating grass. And then, okay, now we're ready to play. And it's just like, I'm curious to know, I don't know what the different types of grass that are growing in my yard are, but I'm curious to know what exactly they're sniffing out. The same thing with soil. If we have a landscaping project and we bring in soil, and it's really just pure, clean soil, they will climb onto the mound and start eating the soil. And I remember the first time that happened, which was like 100 years ago, it feels, I was freaked out because I was just sort of like, oh, dogs aren't going to eat dirt. But now I understand that there are some minerals in there. Yeah. They're like, oh, we're getting these minerals. And so.
Yeah. Clever doggies. Yeah. It's funny. One of my clients was just saying there today, she goes, she's freaking out. My dog's eating loads of grass. I was like, well, it's the spring grass. You know, obviously there can be stuff going on while they eat grass, but it's like when you see your dog going crazy for that, you know, consider Kimberly offering your dog some wheatgrass or some barley grass, which has huge, huge nutritional boost. Like, yeah, if you see them kind of mooching around.
Oh yeah, Nessie has been insane with the grass.
Would you put it in their meal, or would you just leave it growing and just let them chomp on it?
So yeah, like the Zookog way of doing it is you can buy ground down powdered barley grass or wheatgrass. Okay. And just like with the spirulina, you put a bit on the plate, little bit of water, and they'll just lap it up. But if you want to go for it and actually grow some wheatgrass, absolutely. Like I used to do that with my cat Georgie, and he'd be like, nah, nah, nah. He was so happy. Like, so yeah, either or, you know, but that can be a way of going to the next level. When you see they're looking for something in the grass, that can be a nice way, especially this time of year.
Okay, cool.
So what is it about grass that and upset stomachs? Do you have any insight on that?
Yeah, like I think that when they eat grass and they have an upset tummy, if they vomit it back up again, I think they're cleansing the stomach area. And I think if they eat grass and it actually comes out whole to the other end, I think they're actually cleansing the large intestine. Mm-hmm. And they can also be cleansing out some parasites as well. Whereas if they eat the grass and they don't throw it up and it doesn't come out undigested, they're actually eating the grass for the chlorophyll, for the nutrients that you were describing at this time of year, where they're just like, oh, give me the good stuff, you know? But there's different thoughts on it, but that's the way I see it, you know? And also I would pay attention to, I use it as a little bit of a temperature gauge as well. So say, for example, if I'm working with a client that I know definitely has a digestive upset and they've just been eating grass all the time, you know, not just in springtime, I'll use that as one of my questions for our monthly checkups with the clients. Are they still eating the grass? You know what? Now you mentioned it, they haven't had any this month. And I'm like, tick, you know, because I can see that they're starting to come back into balance because of what we're doing. So they're not having to self-medicate.
Nice.
Yeah, we had an episode with Nino recently. He's been having some he's always had a sensitive stomach. And in the last like 6 months or so, it's been particularly sensitive. And we were going to a concert and it changed up our whole feeding schedule because we weren't going to be home at his normal time. And then for like 36 hours after that, he was just not well. He was out eating grass. He was vomiting it up. Like, just changing his schedule like that affected him. So yeah, this has all been playing out in my life recently.
Sure. And what time do you normally feed him at?
Kind of like 7:30 a.m., 7:30 p.m. We pretty much like have it, you know, 12 hours. And so he had to like eat dinner like really early.
Okay.
Because we were going out that night. So luckily we usually have no social calendar. So we're usually pretty, you know, amenable to keeping him on schedule. But like the one time.
Yeah. We did something. Bless him. Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely he needs his routine, doesn't he?
In so many ways. And that actually, you know, leads me into this other concept that you mentioned about the pet parents and the pets having, you know, mirrored issues. Because my husband, especially as he's gotten older, is somebody who really likes to have things, you know, he has a system for everything. He does things the same way every time. And Nino is very much like that too. Nino finds safety in the routines. You know, my husband just likes to be very efficient and he thinks everything out and he has like a system for doing everything. And he thinks I'm very willy-nilly and it drives me crazy. But, you know, the other thing I was just thinking about when you were talking is I've had some weird health stuff going on with me since about August, September last year. And Nino started having this more like acute stomach issue in September of last year. And so now, like, that's really interesting to me time-wise, because I hadn't ever thought about that before until right now.
Yeah, that's it. And like, so is it both of you having stomach issues? Is it?
I would say I've had trouble sleeping and my appetite's been like off.
Okay. And at what time are you waking up at night?
Earlier than usual or often numerous times throughout the night.
Okay. Okay. So, you know, the reason I ask that is because there's like, there's different hours of the day where the organs in the body are most active. Okay. And for me personally, I went through a phase where my sleep was just so out of whack, you know, so I'd fall asleep at like 10 o'clock, but then I'd probably wake up 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, just and with having lots of thoughts. And that can be a sign that the liver is out of balance. Okay. Which when the liver is out of balance, it can throw the digestive system. So that's just to give you an example. So it's really interesting to, you know, kind of think about, well, what time of the day are the symptoms happening? When are they worse? When are they better? Cause that can give us like an indication of where it's out of balance. And if, of course, if you're feeling it, well, then, you know, the animals are just like emotional sponges and they're around us and we're hugging them and we're ourselves 100% around them. That's the thing. Whereas with humans, we might put up a bit of a mask, you know, just sometimes, but with the animals, we're just so wide open. So they just pick up on it and they mirror it back to us. And as you got better, did you get better? Did he get better? Was there a similar timeline to that as well?
Well, I'll just say like my stuff kind of waxes and wanes and so does his.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it. So you got to dig a bit deeper, I suppose, into your own kind of what's going on there. I think it'll help.
Yeah, I was supposed to go to the doctor this week and then like the doctor left the practice or something. So now I have to like reschedule and I had to like get back on somebody else's calendar because I was like, oh, I haven't really had like blood work done in a while. I should probably do all that good stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But like also what I would say is like it's, you know, I love veterinary diagnosis. I love getting some kind of a diagnosis. But, you know, just going back to my example, like when I knew my liver was out of whack and my digestive system was out of whack, my spleen was out of whack as well at the same time. And, you know, for me, I was aware that the energy behind the spleen, the emotional patterns behind the spleen when it's out of whack is it's kind of being a little bit obsessed about things. Okay, just being a little bit too tunnel vision. And then the liver, when my liver went out, the liver is the seat of anger. Okay, so I was annoyed, you know, and then I was waking myself up and I was having all these thoughts, like, you know, the stuff that I was needing to process. So by me being able to kind of join the dots of the emotional pattern behind physical stuff, then you can kind of have more of an insight and go, oh, yeah. So you're still working at it from a medical standpoint if you need to, or with, you know, another holistic therapist on a human level. But it's just having that understanding of the emotional pattern behind it, because that's usually what the animals are digging at.
Is there a place where we can learn more about, you know, those type of things, like if I'm feeling this way, it could be because I mean, I've seen that with food energetics and how these type of foods feed these type of, you know, if you have I don't even know what I'm saying. But you get it. Food energetics, I have a whole chart in my garage, which is where I keep all of my dog, their food, their supplements, their treats, everything is in an area of the garage. And I have a huge chart on the wall where I can figure out, you know, if I have a hot dog. These are the proteins I want to stay away from. Yeah. These are the proteins I want to look for. But is there something that is more on the emotional side? Because that's something that I haven't heard of before.
Yeah. So what you're talking about there is Chinese medicine food therapy on your chart. Okay. Mm-hmm. The hot, the cold, all that kind of, which is so powerful. But yeah, the next thing then is the emotional side. So there's a few different people that have gone deep into that. And one person that I love that I always refer back to is Louise Hay. Okay. So Louise Hay, she wrote this book, You Can Heal Your Life.
She has the cards.
Yeah, well, she's just done so much stuff. Like, and in the back of the book, right, she has this chart, and it has all, like, not all, but a serious amount of physical conditions in here, like, you know, dementia. Okay, a lot of senior dogs get dementia. Dementia is a refusal to deal with the world as it is. You know, hopelessness and anger. So there's something going, and it doesn't mean that it's all of those things.
Yeah,
it can be some of them, and to a degree, right? So it's like my dog, you know, it could be like 10% that feeling that way. Diarrhea, fear, rejection, running off. I was working with a dog with that yesterday. So it just helps you understand. So I was saying to the client, I said, well, when the diarrhea flares up, are you experiencing fear, rejection, wanting to run away? She's just like, I could see it in her. She just like, it's like a light bulb moment, you know? And so, yeah, this is the book, okay, that people could refer to.
Can you show me the cover? Yeah. Okay. I'm sitting here. I opened up Amazon and I was just like, that's it. Here's the cover.
I'll make sure we have a link in the show notes for everybody too.
Yeah. So you'll all know now.
But yeah, I think that is so fascinating because similar to what you both have been saying, I had a dog, Sydney, and my partner used to say that if I came back as a dog, I would be Sydney. Like she was my doppelganger. And it was funny because she and I would look at her. She would be perfectly happy to sit on the sofa with me all day long and just watch movies. And that's like my dream. On a rainy day, I would just sit there and we would do all of these things. And so it was so sad for me when she passed away. But, you know, I do try to look at, how I am around my dogs. I've never gone as far as thinking that my dogs are mirroring me. I mostly have focused on the fact that if I'm stressed out, then I'm stressing my dogs out too. So whenever I do get frustrated, like yesterday, technology, I was having those moments all day. And so my dogs went on mini walks yesterday because whenever I was getting stressed out, it's like, let's go for a walk. And then I would come back as the computer. Okay, the computer's back again. So, but I've never gone so far as to really think about what am I going through that my dogs are picking up on.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what, to be honest with you though, Kimberly, it's usually by the time people find me and find this kind of work, either they've got a really, really sick dog, you know, it's gotten to kind of like a crisis point, whereas you're kind of then having to turn it around. But I think in general, when they do mirror us, and yeah, we're just going to have natural life, we're going to have bad tech days, we're going to have all this kind of stuff, and they'll do it. But it's just like, I think the best thing to do is look after yourself. You know, as long as you're going for your walks when you feel you're getting stressed, you're getting your yoga done, you're doing your massages, you're eating a bit of good food, you know, because then it'll kind of keep the major mirroring needs at bay.
Yeah.
You know?
So when you work with clients and you start diving into this mirroring, how open are people to that? Like, do you get any pushback, or are people like, oh, that makes total sense?
Yeah. I think most people who work with me, if they've been on my website in any way, shape or form, they kind of know I'm quite holistic. So they'll tend to have that kind of a mindset. But the odd time I will get a client that still is a little bit resistant, and they're kind of like, I'm not quite sure I agree with that. And I go, that's okay. You know, you don't have to agree with it, but let's see how the dog does. Okay. So what can happen then is a few months down the line, the dog is not getting better because the person still has that level of resistance in them. So I'll circle back and I'll say, you know, and they'll have had at least 2 months on the flower essence at that point, created by the dog for them to write, to unpick whatever the blocks are. And by that point, I find that people's hearts and minds then have probably opened up enough that they just kind of go, yeah, actually, you're right. Something has happened. The dog has orchestrated something where it's become blatantly obvious. Like literally the dogs, what they'll do is I get the people maybe to do a mirroring meditation with their dog. And if they have major blocks, sometimes they'll feel something come up in the meditation. The dog can do something like run out of the room or suddenly get diarrhea or suddenly throw up. Like they'll do something because they're on the team, you know, and they'll do something that's pretty undeniable to try and wake their person up. But it doesn't happen very often. Most people are pretty open to it, but I don't push it. I just say, look, this is what it could be, you know, because I'm not a human therapist either. But it's, yeah, we get there in the end.
Yeah, I'm very curious. I'm like kind of obsessed now about this whole timing issue with me and Nino.
I know, me too.
So, if we have a situation, right, where something is wrong with our dogs, right, and we don't know what it is, and I don't know if Kimberly relates with this also, but I know it's very true for me. Like, I then become, like, very obsessed with, like, what's going on and trying to get to the answer and, you know, obsessing over this all the time and, you know, reading everything I can, researching everything I can, asking everybody I can. When we get like that, is that just kind of stressing our dogs out worse? Like, I'm sure that they're aware of, like, how concerned we are about them. Are we just making things worse when we get like that?
So you're getting a little bit spleeny.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah. So I think, like, animals are very, very forgiving and very unconditional and very patient with us. Right. And they know we have to do our human spin outs. We got to do it. Like, it's part of being, you know, we love them so much. And it's easier said than done. Oh, just remain calm when your dog has this sickness and you'll figure it out. No, we got to be real. I think if you have those moments where you feel you're obsessing over it a little bit too much, just pull yourself back in again. You obviously have to get answers and get solutions. But if it's keeping you awake, and more importantly, if it's keeping you from minding yourself and from sleeping properly, eating properly, exercising properly, getting your fundamentals done in a day, then you're going into a territory where the dog might mirror you much stronger because they're trying to bring you back in. Okay, so it's not that you don't find results and find answers and get support. It's just doing it in a way that isn't going to make the situation more draining for you, because it will drain them more then. Does that answer your question? Does that help?
Yeah.
I think one thing that helped me when, because I've lost two dogs to cancer, one to old age over the past few years. And the one thing a veterinarian said two things to me. One was, my dog doesn't know that they're sick. You know, so it's like, if your dog is acting, because my thing was with one of my dogs, actually, Scout, everything was normal. He was running, playing, jumping. He was having a good life. And she was just like, well, you know, don't treat your dog like they're sick, you know, enjoy your time with your dog. And that helped me sort of come out of that space of being sad at eventually losing my dog. And the other thing was to understand that I've been doing everything right. My dog probably would have died a lot sooner had I not laid the foundation that I already laid. And because it's sort of like, we're, you know, I shouldn't say never, but I don't believe that we're going to solve cancer in my lifetime. Or, you know, I think it's going to take several generations of dogs for us to start seeing the turnaround in their life. We need everyone to get on board with that. And so the little steps that we are taking with our individual dogs, you know, it may not feel like we're making a difference, but we are. Because, you know, who knows? Because, you know, like with Scout, I was just like, I did everything right. I mean, every single thing right. And, you know, but still, it's like, you know, there, it's not just about diet. It's not just about toxins. You know, there's just so many things going on that this little guy was just, you know, he had cancer, you know, already programmed into his system, but I kept it at bay for a lot longer than if he had just lived a traditional life of annual vaccinations or, and, you know, processed diet and, you know, flea and tick repellents, the chemical ones and all of that, or even a, like a stressful life. You know, he had a really fun, happy life. And so, you know, that's what kept him going. And, you know, so that's what keeps me from stressing out too much and kind of enjoying the process, because I know every single thing I learn, you know, with each dog that teaches me something, I get to apply it to the next dog, because, you know, what I know today versus what I knew 10 years ago is just, I feel like I have a PhD in my dogs because I've learned so much from them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that. I love what you said there, because it is, we're putting as much of the foundations of health in as we possibly can. And each animal teaches us so much, you know, for the next one that comes along. And, you know, what I would also like to add into that as well, is when we're doing everything that we can and, you know, everything is perfect in this lifetime for the animal and they still get sick. You know, this is another area where I go a little bit deeper in the terms of, and not everybody's going to believe in this, but I believe in karmic stuff. I believe that animals also can bring stuff in from previous lifetimes. Okay. So it's like, if you're likened to it, say, I grew up, I had asthma as a kid. Okay. And asthma is a real kind of genetic thing. And it came down to my family line. Okay, so I then had to work through that and cure that within myself. And I feel it's the same with the animals. I feel that genetically stuff can come down the line and it's just in their body. And you did everything you could to keep Scout's cancer at bay, but it was still there, you know, and he had the longer life. But I also feel on a spiritual level, there's like this hereditary karma, this past life stuff that comes in. And this is something I always like to share with people, because I'd say most of my clients are pedigrees. Okay. They're pedigree dogs. And obviously the gene pool has been shrunk down in order to create a pedigree. That's how it happens. They breed these dogs in smaller gene pools. And in Chinese medicine, we have something called the kidney jing energy. So the kidney jing energy is an energy that goes into all of our kidneys, including the kidneys of the animals, at the time of conception. Okay. So if for any reason the mom or dad, whether it's an animal or human, is not feeling good at that time of conception, it impacts the kidney jing energy. So it's literally coming down the family line going into you. And your kidney jing energy is like your battery. It's a finite amount of energy that you have for your entire lifetime. And to give you an idea, like a dog or a cat is born with about 30 years worth of kidney jing energy. And a dog is born with about 20 years worth of kidney jing energy, maybe a little bit more. But because of all the modern toxins and chemicals and vaccination, everything you've mentioned, Kimberly, it just chips away at that kidney jing energy. So it shortens their life. Okay. Mm-hmm. But also I think in particular with the pedigree animals, one of the greatest, saddest things we have here in Ireland is if we've got the highest number of puppy farms in Europe. Okay. It's not really regulated here about how the dogs, the pedigree dogs are minded. And it's just, you know, it needs to change. So, but I come up against so many traumatized pedigree puppies who've come from puppy farms and have all this stuff going on emotionally and physically. And it's because mum and dad, can you imagine those, the bitch and the male dog are in this environment where their well-being is in such a negative. And then they're made to have these little pups over every season. So that kidney jing energy is so, so weakened. So sometimes when we rescue an animal or we take on a pedigree animal, and a lot of my clients have pedigrees that they know came from puppy farms, but they went to get the dog and they literally couldn't leave the dog behind. You know, their heart is just, I didn't know it was like this and I'm not leaving you here. So their dog already comes at a negative, and we do everything we can to keep them well. But there is just that inherent energy that hasn't managed to come true in full effect. And that's when you'll have stuff going on. But we love them as long as we can. Yeah. And, you know, we do everything we can with our knowledge and our PhD.
Yeah. I mean, and it's so true. I work in rescue. Well, we both, you know, Aaron and I both work in rescue. And I think my Apollo, he was a, well, I think all of my dogs were technically backyard bred. I think Zoe, who... she's my healthiest dog right now, you know, basically mentally and physically she's killing it. But I feel like, you know, she came from, it was an accidental litter, and she came from a home where the person who had the puppies, she didn't want it. She couldn't keep the puppies, but she didn't want to, give them to anyone. So she interviewed she treated it very seriously. And we actually got Zoe for free because we got Scout from her. And then she was, Scout and Zoe were a bonded pair. And so she was just like, you know, I just didn't want to separate them because I wasn't sure. And my partner was like, oh, well, yeah, we'll take two puppies. and then texted me because he flew to Idaho to meet them and meet the family. And it was like basically going to a real breeder. And so I think ultimately we spent $70. on two puppies, which is, you know, she wanted to make sure they were going to a very good home. And so that's why she was just very particular. She was like, I don't care how long it takes. I want to do this. And so I'm grateful for that. But I truly, even though I did lose Scout, you know, I attribute Zoe's health to that as well. And then with Apollo, he came from someone who, this is a story that I created. I think that during the popularity of Game of Thrones and everyone was breeding huskies, and then when people would realize what huskies were really like, and so the shelters were filling up with huskies, I think someone thought, well, what if we bred a husky with a golden retriever? And that's where I got Apollo. And he is a husky and a golden retriever through and through. He is the absolute best dog. He is not the dog for everyone, but he is the absolute best dog in the world. And I'm convinced that because he is the happiest, like, he is the happiest dog I've ever had. And he loves everyone. And I'm convinced that he's probably going to live forever. He's probably going to outlive me. And then my youngest dog, my puppy, she came from someone who was profiting off of the pandemic and creating pandemic puppies. And so her entire litter is anxious. And I had her test it with Embark. So I've made connections with other people who have her siblings, but from previous or earlier litters. And same thing, super anxious dogs. Mm-hmm. So it's something that I am working on with her because I worry about what that's going to do with her lifespan over time. So far, she's great, but
yeah. Oh yeah, that's it, isn't it? The poor pandemic puppies. Like, it was, I think we're collectively still traumatized from that time as well. So,
right. Okay. So I know this is a little off topic, but it's your fault. I just finished season 2 of The Morning Show, and that's where they go over the pandemic. And I've thought about, of course, you know, I work from home now because of the pandemic. So it's never far out of my mind, but I didn't realize that I shut the door and locked it with 10 locks to what it was like. And it was so hard for me to watch that season because I forgot how scary it was and how angry we were. And I forgot all of it. And what's funny is that season 2, there were so many things going on during that time, and it only covered like a drop of it. And I was so anxious watching it. And I have been so stressed out over the past few days watching this as those emotions came back in. It's like insane.
Listen, it's still within us. Like, and I was down at the stables there again. We jump the species a little bit here. I was down at the stables with one of my clients, and the horse kept getting lame. Okay, despite one of the amazing vets putting her needles in and on the herbs, and you know, just why does the horse keep getting lame? And you see, when there's an unwillingness to move forward in life, okay, you'll get problems with the feet, the hooves, the hips, or on any animal and ourselves as well. And I said to the client, I said, is there anything in your life that you're not willing to move forward in? Now, this was just recently. And she just goes, oh my God. She goes, during COVID, my business just died, and I have this opportunity to create this other new business with this amazing product for horses, and I just can't do it because I'm so traumatized from losing my business overnight. And I was just like, it's still here, guys. And you see, the horse was picking up on that, mm-hmm. and he created some essences for her. Yeah, because like when the vet was putting the needles in, the horse is just talking to me, going, "You got to tell her it's coming from her." I was just like, oh.
"So doing this to me?"
Yeah, so we, you know, we did the whole essence thing, and he's better now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's there, like it's there, and the animals know it's there.
You know, it's interesting when I found Penny. So, you know, I literally just found Penny in an alley in Baltimore. You know, she just jumped in my friend's Jeep and she became my BFF. And I noticed pretty early on from when we adopted her that she had something off with her right hip, like her rear right hip. And then I ended up having a medical issue that kind of had me like out of circulation for a couple months. And when I kind of got back into life after that, my right hip was bothering me, which it had never done before. And so I started going to the same chiropractor that Penny went to because she treats people and animals. And so like to this day, I still struggle with this right hip. And even though we had Penny's pretty well fixed anyway, it's just, it's pretty interesting, right?
Yeah, you're seeing the mirroring, right? It's just mm-hmm. once the veil has been lifted, you know? So, you know, what you could do, Erin, is just like kind of think back to that time. You go, was there anything around that time I wasn't willing to move forward in, you know, and just unlock it for yourself, like mm-hmm. do some journaling.
Yeah, because I can think of many things that I have shut down, basically, you know, type of thing where, and I actually can, even with dogs that have gotten sick, and I think it's one of those, it's like, I'm not saying that I made my dog sick, but I can see how I created an atmosphere okay. where illness thrived and they were like trying to show me. Because I do believe that, you know, our dogs come to us, you know, because like each of the dogs that actually all three of the dogs that I have in my house now, I should not have. You know, Zoe was just sort of like, yeah, I'll take a second puppy. And, you know, Apollo was my stepson's dog and he became my dog. And Bella, I went to a rescue event and I was tired. And so my friend was like, oh, well, just go sit in the puppy pen with the puppies. And Bella immediately crawled into my lap. And from that point on, she was my dog.
And she was like, I'm just fostering her.
I know.
And we're all like, yeah, right.
I went home and foster her. And yeah, she never left. But I feel like opening myself up to what are you here to teach me? And I know that when they go, it's because, you know, their assignment is finished. And so now they're, you know, they're going to go home. But yeah, so I try to stay as open-minded as possible as far as, because yeah, right now my left hip bothers me and Zoe's been limping. And so,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, Zoe's been limping just slightly. Yeah. But what's funny is that what helps is when I get outside and move, it's sort of like just stopping. Cause you know, when I work from home, so I'm just sitting all day working, But when I get up and I go outside and I move, and we have a large property, so I don't have to actually go somewhere to walk my dogs. We can just wander around. When I come back inside, I feel no pain and Zoe's not limping. So it's just sort of like a reminder, we need to get outside.
Absolutely. Get the blood moving.
So I'm curious, you know, Kimberly, you had said something about like whether dogs know that they're sick or not. What do you think about that, Lisa? Do they know?
I believe they do, you know, and because when I do like a meridian chart, where in Chinese medicine, the energy flows into the different organs, okay, through the channels, which are called meridians, they mirror the venous system in the body. And they'll tell me exactly what meridians are out of balance each month and what ones have come into balance. And then they'll tell me exactly what meridian is the priority meridian. So therefore, if I work on that meridian, it'll start to work on all the others. And they'll tell me what botanicals they need to start to work on that priority meridian. They know what food they need. That's why they know zoo pharmacognosy. They know what to self-select to bring themselves back into balance. But they also know when we're sick. Like I love to share the story where my friend's dad developed throat cancer, bless him. And I straight away said to him, make sure your dog doesn't lie on your dad's throat. And he goes, she's been doing that the last month. And I said, she knows, you know, like our cats will sit on your chest when you've got lung cancer, and the cat will die of lung cancer and you survive. Like, I mean, there's so many stories like that.
Oh, I'm pretty sure Nino knew I had breast cancer before I did, because I can remember him like nosing and bumping and stuff into me.
And because of that, anytime my dog comes anywhere near my breast, I am paranoid because of you. I'm like, what are you doing? Are you saying you?
Time for a mammogram, Kimberly.
I even got a mammogram because I'm just like, and they're like, oh, what's bringing you in? It's like, well, my dog. It's been nosing around.
Like they're just amazing. I mean, that's why they're such good therapy animals, right? They know when people are going to have seizures and all that kind of stuff. Like, they're so in tune. So,
I saw a video recently of a dog responding to someone who had a seizure, and it was such an amazing video. I mean, just, it's like, I think dogs, you know, because I just believe they're so much, they're more elevated than we are, that, no one wants to die. No one wants to leave their loved ones, but I just think that they look at illness and death as a natural transition, more so than humans do. So we have, there's a whole industry, horror movies that have us terrified of death and everything. But I feel like our dogs they are so skilled at celebrating the moment and staying in the moment and enjoying life that, like I think Sydney stayed, she was very sick. I knew she knew she was sick, but she stayed with me for 5 weeks until I was ready to let her go. And then when I truly told her, it's like, okay, I'm okay. And she left. And so I just feel like dogs just have, I just think they're closer to the spiritual realm than we are. And so they know they're good at it. They can accept it.
Yeah, absolutely they can. They're much better at that whole dying process. When I work with senior animals, I'll do like the animal communication at end of life stage for some of my senior clients. And, often one question people will ask at that point, which is totally valid, is like, what does the animal want? Do they want to be buried or do they want to be cremated? And the animals will just say, whatever makes them feel more connected to me, whatever ritual that they need, it's okay. And then there's also the question of, euthanasia? Is the animal going to suffer too much? Do they want euthanasia? When do they want euthanasia? Or do they want homeopathic euthanasia? Or all these questions. And, you know, one thing I've just learned over the years around this is that, like you said, there's just such a wisdom and a clarity, but also an awareness of how we're not wise around that mm-hmm. time. And one of my doggy clients at the moment, she's going through that now. She's got dementia. So we're just preparing, you know, to help her leave her body while she still has grace and dignity and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's beautiful. Like, it really is. And just in one of the communications the other week, she actually predicted it. She said, I just want my dog mom to know that if it comes to a point where she has to get a vet in to let me go, it's okay. Now, she was doing okay at this point. She goes, I just mm-hmm. wanted to know she's okay. But then she suddenly had a decline and it just all came to a fore. And I said, look, do you want to prepare and see if there's a specialist vet that can come in and does it a beautiful way in your home? And she goes, yeah. She goes, and I think it's now. And I said, well, remember what she said. She said this could happen.
Yeah.
And she's okay with it. So having that, it just brings so much heart ease at such an impossible time. Like,
yeah. It's so tough. I think that's the question. I used to be members of, you know, two cancer groups because I hemangiosarcoma and lymphoma, and I've since left the groups because the question that comes up all the time and it breaks my heart is, how do I know?
Yeah.
How did you guys know when it was time to say goodbye? And it's funny because I truly believe that we know our dogs and we communicate with our dogs a lot more clearly than we realize. And like with Rodrigo, I knew exactly when it was time. I got up one day and it was just like, it was so 100% clear that today was the day. And I took him in. I called to see if I could get someone out, but it was too last minute to get someone to come to the house. I took him in and I have the best veterinarians and they both came in, they prayed over him both before and after, and they were so amazing with me and he was gone. But it was shocking to me just how the clarity that I had. And the same thing happened with, Scout, because he was doing so well, I was worried that I wouldn't know. But it was, he just basically one day he was going. And so, you know, I helped him, you know, and spent that last day with him, gave him the comfort that just in case he pulled out, but he didn't. And mm-hmm. so I took him in the next day. And it was funny because, well, not funny, but when I took him to the clinic, it was like he was done. Like he was just holding out for us to get to a place that can help him. And he was just done. So I've now learned to just trust myself and to trust my dogs, because I think that I don't think we give ourselves the credit for how well we know our animals and how, I mean, we know their different barks. I posted something recently where I said, I know each of my dog's footsteps. Like, I know who's walking. And I got so many comments on that, just really innocuous post of people saying they know the dogs by how they drink their water. They know their dogs by their bark. They know their dog. They knew all these things. And it's like, we know our dogs so well, but we are so afraid when it comes to the end, because, you know, partly we don't want to say goodbye, but we're so terrified. But I think deep down, you know, we're communicating with them all day, every day.
Yeah. And they're the masters of it, the masters of telepathic communication, because they're doing it with each other all the time. And they're sending us messages to the heart energy, you know, for sure. Yeah.
So, you know, one other thing I was thinking about is how you can have a dog that seems like they're doing really well, and then they either like go downhill really fast, or like suddenly you realize like, oh, there's something terribly wrong, but they seemed like they were doing so well. Like, do you ever get any insight? And like, are they just trying to be strong for us? Do they not want to, you know, show how they're feeling? Like, do you ever get any insight on like how it can seem like they're doing so well and then all of a sudden they're not?
Yeah, I think like part of that, the way I see it, is that in the natural world, when an animal shows a weakness, they become prey to other animals, right? So you look at it from that standpoint. So if you show a weakness in your body, you can get into trouble pretty quick. So they'll stay strong. And then suddenly they're not, especially cats. Okay. And they're just like, and then when they're down, there's trouble, you know that there's an issue there. So I think there's that stage when just kind of when they're sick. But then also I think from the end of life stage, when you're further down the line where they think they're doing well and suddenly they're just not. I think it is a huge part of when we're ready to let them go. They'll just kind of then start to, or, you know, when my cat Georgie, when I was managing his hyperthyroidism, he survived about a year, he was alive a year later. And it wasn't until I got to the clarity in my head, I went, you know what, you've suffered enough. And I really meant it. And I said, like, if, you know, I can't, there's nothing more I can do here. Nothing is working, pharmaceutical or otherwise. I said, you know, you go. And he literally died about 2 days later, just gone in a second, you know. So they'll do that as well. They'll just kind of time it, you know, that when we're ready. So I think there's a lot of different things at play, Erin, you know.
So if we have an animal that's having some kind of issue, should we all just sort of take a step back and look at ourselves also?
Yes, please do. If you take anything away from this podcast, you know, it's to just know that we're so interlinked. And I'd say, you know, obviously we got to do our research. We got to do all the stuff we need to do to make sure they're well. But if we could take a step before we do all that stuff, is just to really start to maybe just journal it out. Or if you like to meditate, just meditate on it and kind of say, what is it? What is it you want to communicate with me? What is it you want to share with me? And that can, you know, the animal then can send you insights, or it'll come afterwards. You have an aha moment. You don't have to be any amazing, you know, gifted animal communicator. Like Kimberly said, we're communicating with them all the time. We just have to slow down enough so as the volume can go up a little bit. And whether it is we get a sense of something, we get an insight, it can be as simple as that. And just start there. Why is it happening now? What is going on with me now? Is there any way that what's happening with them, within them, is a mirror of me? And then you're starting off from a much, much more powerful place.
I want to go look this chart up with the emotions in the body.
I know. That is just like so amazing.
Yeah. So that's the place to start, you know, what is it that's happening? You know, what's on the list, and then just meditate on it or journal it.
That's fascinating, Lisa. So where can everybody go to find out more about how to work with you?
Sure. My website is animalhealing.ie. So people are welcome. I work with animals all over the world. I work remotely. Most of my clients are in Ireland and the United States, actually. And yeah, come check it out. Also, if you want to see my work in action, it comes to life really on social media, Instagram. It's Animal Healing Lisa Tully. So I'm quite active on there, so we can connect on there as well.
Oh, here's a random question for you. So I bet a lot of people listening to this podcast are familiar with Dr. Connor Brady, also from Ireland, right? So I know that there's obviously some voices for things like raw feeding and holistic care where you are. What is like, is that more commonplace, or are you still very much, you know, like here raw feeding is so, you know, Kimberly was telling us before we started, like that she was in a group, you know, with some regular dog people, and like raw feeding was like, wait, what? You know? So is that still like uncommon where you are, or are these things like more mainstream? Like how does it compare? Do you have any idea?
Sure. Yeah, it's definitely not mainstream. But what I'll say is Connor's great work, like it's definitely become louder. And it's infiltrating into the doggy kind of communities and things like that. But it's most certainly not mainstream.
Okay.
No way.
Okay. I was just curious.
Yeah.
This was fantastic. I have thoughts. I need to now go walk my dogs and just think on this, because this was so good. And now I got to go listen to the Believe in Dog episode.
Lisa has an amazing story. So yeah, I hope everybody will check that out. Thank you so much, Lisa. Yeah,
thank you so much.
Thank you to both of you for having me on.